Emperor Tales of the Frozen South by CWB and read by Ghost of Nuggets Past. Chapter 14, Anahe. Only. Summary. John looks up at the sky and shakes his head. Sherlock is pretty sure everything he said may have been a bit not good. When John looks at him again, he has a very frustrated look on his face. Sherlock prefers his amused look, or even his confused look, to frustrated. Listen to me, okay? Please listen to me. I need you to hear me. Sherlock nods. He furrows his brow. He leans forward. He's listening. He's really, really listening. A quick timeline review. Sherlock and John and all the other baby Pengs hatched in early August. In September, the hatchlings are big enough to do a bit of exploring by themselves, and the first council meetings take place. They learn the legend of Korora. In early October, Sherlock and John meet, and Mycroft gives his somewhat bungled life stages speech. In late October, John begins to molt. The boys are spending most of their time together hanging out, talking about the history of Pengs and what the elders can teach them. They are now spending their nights in the creche. Then we skip ahead to January, the beginning of summer. The boys are now 6 months old, the equivalent of the teenage years. Olive talks to Sherlock about his prophecy, and they all prepare to leave Podeba for the open waters. Sherlock says goodbye to John, who is leaving first, and they plan to see each other again in a few days on the iceberg Cassiopeia. The last several chapters have all taken place within a few days in January. This one does too. Sherlock insists that John walk in front of him, so that if he slips as they climb, Sherlock can break his fall. He also insists that they take the longer way, climbing around half of Cassiopeia as they ascend, because it's less steep. If they could have tobogganed, he would have insisted on that too, but even this extended trail has enough of an incline to make that impossible. John growls and huffs and carries on about not being a baby, but Sherlock isn't having it. Better he thinks Sherlock an overprotective hen than have him permanently injure his still-healing wing. John grouses a bit more, Sherlock fusses a bit more, and when Sherlock suggests he carry John, John laughs and said he'd like to see Sherlock try. The tense mood breaks, and they start the journey up the berg, John leading the way. Now, over his shoulder, John calls back a constant stream of commentary about what he so eagerly wants to show Sherlock. It's just past Fate's Peak, where I was going to wait for you. Well, you know, when it happened. I'd been up there the day before, just exploring when we found it. We? Who's we? Sherlock starts to ask this very question, but he can't get a word in edgewise. You're not going to believe your eyes. It's like something out of a mythology. Like maybe a god lived here once or something. Or maybe, I don't know, a mermaid.
A mermaid?
You're going to love it, Sherlock, and we can use it as a fort or a hideout, because at one end there's a little ledge with an opening above it, and you can see everything from there, the whole landing shore down below, and the sea just as far as the shelf, and well, just wait. Sherlock takes in most of what John says, but his own thoughts get in the way now and then. John sounds nervous, he thinks. Is he nervous? Why is he nervous? Is he afraid that Sherlock won't like this special place? Or is it something else? Is he worried? Is he still thinking about everything he witnessed the day before? Maybe he's in shock. Are you in shock, John? He yells out in front of him, and then immediately thinks about what a stupid thing that was to say, because if John is in shock, would he even know? What's he going to say? Well, yes, Sherlock, I am totally in shock and losing my mind, too. Thank you. He walks right into John, who has stopped in his tracks and turned to answer him. Oof! Am I in shock? I didn't mean it like that. How did you mean it? You're talking a lot, and you seem nervous, and... Oh, John, do you have a fever? Are you sick? Is your wound getting infected? John looks up at the sky and shakes his head. Sherlock is pretty sure everything he said may have been a bit not good. When John looks at him again, he has a very frustrated look on his face. Sherlock prefers his amused look, or even his confused look, to frustrated. listen to me, okay? Please listen to me. I need you to hear me.
Sherlock nods. He furrows his brow. He leans forward. He's listening. He's really, really listening.
Okay. Yesterday was, bar none, the worst day of my entire, albeit short, life. Do you know why? No. Don't even try to answer that. Let me tell you why. It was in part because I saw horrible, horrible things. Things I never want to see again. Things such would never even happen. And because 37 of us died, 37 of my friends and their families, and pangs that I should have had the opportunity to know better at some point in the future. But the biggest reason that yesterday was the worst day of my life is because I was sure you were dead, Sherlock. I was convinced beyond all doubt that those monsters got to your pack too, and that you were gone, snapped in half, torn apart, dead. I thought I would never see you again, Sherlock. I thought I would have to spend the rest of my life without you. Do you have any idea, any at all, what that felt like? And then when you arrived and started calling for me, and I realized you were alive, that I hadn't lost you, I knew I'd be okay. I knew I'd survive what had just happened. So, no, I'm not in shock, and I don't have a fever. But what I am is very, very grateful and relieved. Sherlock is shaking now and doesn't care if John is done or not. Do I have any idea what that felt like? Are you insane? I was within sight of this floating chunk of ice, John. We were almost here, and I saw it happening, and Mycroft saw, and he made us turn away, and he led us away, and I had no idea if you were one of them, John. And then we had to wait. We had to wait for the scouts to survey the area and come back and say that we could keep going, and that we could come and see the aftermath and call for our loved ones, John, so I could call for you and see if you were dead. If I would have to spend the rest of my life without you. So yes, I think I know what that feels like.
His words echo off the walls of ice around them, his cries repeating again and again until there is nothing but cold air and silence between them.
Loved ones? John asks. What? Am I one of your loved ones? Of course you're... John, you're more... No, you're less.
I'm less than a loved one? Sherlock closes his eyes and takes a deep, calming breath. This is not one of the various love-professing scenarios he'd created and tucked away in the John wing of his ice palace. Never mind, he thinks. There's no going back now.
John... You are my only one. You must know that.
John shuffles on his feet and takes a step closer.
How would I know that, Sherlock? You've never said anything. You never want to be with my friends. You barely talk to me when we aren't alone. You're so much smarter than me, and you know important things like Elder Erebus, and your dad and brother sit on the council. You're like colony royalty. I'm nobody next to you.
Sherlock cannot believe that John thinks he's nobody. He tries to interject, but John doesn't stop.
And Sherlock, you never call for me. You have never called for me, not once before yesterday. It's always me going to find you, every single day. That's not true, John. That can't be true,
Sherlock says. But even as he protests, he knows that it is true. He always lets John call for him at the start of each day, to look for him first, so he can hear John's voice calling just for him. It's true. And it's not just that, not if he's honest with himself. He lets John call first to be sure that John will call, to make sure that John still wants to see him. Fix this, fix this, fix this, he thinks to himself.
I'm sorry. You're right. You are. I do always let you call for me, because it's the best sound in the world. It's one of the best moments of my day, when I hear your voice calling my name. But John, also, it's because you're so popular and sociable, and you're so athletic and kind, and everyone likes you. You could be friends with anyone. So yes, I would wait for you to call, to be sure that you wanted to see me again, because I couldn't believe, day after day, you still would.
John steps forward again and reaches out to Sherlock.
Of course I would. Of course I do.
They are bill to bill now.
Why?
John wraps his good wing around Sherlock's neck and pulls him flush against his body.
Because you are my only one too, Anahe.
Oh,
yeah.
They stand, leaning against each other, heads on each other's shoulders, and commune through touch. Sherlock can feel John's heart beating against his chest, and his own answering back. He is overwrought with the significance of their outbursts. The sounds of wind and sea wrap around them, and in time, frantic gives way to awareness, and then to understanding. They are together.
Will you take me now?
Sherlock asks.
Excuse me? To the ice foot. I think it would be best if we continue now, because I would very much like to be someplace private with you for a little while, because I have messed all of this up, and I need to make it better. I need to tell you things, all sorts of things, and...
Shh, stop. You haven't messed up anything, Sherping.
But yes, let's keep going. We're almost there anyway.
The ice cave exceeds both John's descriptions and Sherlock's expectations. It is open on both sides, which allows light to flood the cavern, no matter what the time of day. As if by magic, that light is brilliant blue, catching and refracting the sea below and the sky above, capturing the two mighty elements at the horizon, and combining them here within Cassiopeia. The interior is slightly spherical in shape, a long, narrow oval, and the walls are smooth and shiny. Above them, hundreds of minuscule icicles cling to the ceiling, glistening as they warm in the afternoon air and prepare to melt, refreezing at night before they get the chance. It is high enough in the berg to give the impression of floating above the sea, a perch in a cloud, and the views from its vantage point are vast. Sherlock sees more of the world in one glance than he has ever imagined possible. Open though it may be, it is rendered safe and semi-private by the ledge John spoke of earlier. They stand behind it now, the highest point touching them at chest level, and gaze down on the colony below them. They watch as groups of their peers gather and break apart, as scouts scan the water for threats, as some birds slip into the sea and others leap out, then skid to a stop on the ice. When Sherlock speaks, he whispers, out of reverence for the spirit of this place John has found.
It's amazing, John. I understand now why you were so excited to show me. It is truly spectacular. Isn't it? We don't have anything like this on Podeba. Who else knows about this? I don't know. I came up here with Harriet, but she wasn't nearly as impressed as I was. She just wanted to go back down and eat. We almost didn't find it, but I wanted to see if there was a better place to watch for you than Fate's Peak. I made her keep going. I guess most pings have no reason to leave the shore in the first place, given how much of the summer we spend in the water.
John's words remind Sherlock of what Elder Erebus said about most pings being self-centered and not seeing beyond their most immediate interests. That, in turn, makes him think about all the other things the elders so openly discussed with him. What should he tell John? When? Despite the revelations of their recent conversation, he does not want to force them into the future, toward problems that they might not even encounter. What, he questions, of everything that was said, is relevant to them at this moment? John interrupts his train of thought with a touch to his wing.
Sherlock? Yes, John? Are you all right? You seem very far away just then. We said a lot on the way here. Are you? I meant everything I said, Johnling. I should have told you sooner how much you mean to me. I didn't realize that you didn't know. I promise to do a better job of showing you from now on. You do show me, Sherlock. I just needed to hear it. You're the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. You're my best pang, the most important of all. I am? I'm your best pang? Yeah, of course you are. Not Lestra or Stamfjord or Marilla? What? No,
I like them all a lot, and they're still my friends, too, but not like you are. You're mine, too, but John, you should know. We might find... He groans at his inability to form or finish a sentence. What is it? Sherlock feels trapped inside his own head, unable to find the words to tell John that the world might conspire against them, that there might be battles yet to fight. He doesn't know how to talk about the long journey ahead of him, and he doesn't want to scare John, doesn't want to give him reason to doubt what he's only just given Sherlock. He wants to relish this, to tuck it deep inside and let it set him on fire just for now, while it all seems so possible. John, what did your shell say? Did your mother read the pieces after you hatched? My shell? What does that have to do with anything? Potentially everything? John smiles at Sherlock and shakes his head, confused but willing to humor him. Yeah, okay. She read it. She said I was going to meet a mad genius Pangit with beautiful eyes and a tendency toward dramatics. Sherlock tries to sort the words, to put them back in order, but he can only see two of them, beautiful and eyes. John giggles. Sherlock sighs. Sorry, I'll be serious. It doesn't really make much sense, but then again, my mom isn't really known for her pathetic shell-reading skills. It was something about having to make an important decision. About what? Dunno. That part of the shell must have been missing. What about when? Did she tell you that? Nope. What about yours? What did yours say? Mine? Yours. Oh, well, Sherlock stammers. Just something vague about changing the heart of the colony, or I don't know, it's all a bit blurry now. John gives him a fondly exasperated look that makes his belly flutter. Bit blurry? You're a horrible liar, Sherlock, but I think I'll keep you anyway, at least until something better comes along. Sherlock wants to say that John isn't funny, not one bit, but then John winks and tilts forward, and Sherlock leans down. And when their bills touch, he's pretty sure he can see glitter and sparkle in the walls of the ice cave around them. Notes. Maori translation. Anahe. Only, none but, nothing but, alone, without exception, there is nothing, no one else.